Golden West, Season 1, Episode 11. For the first day, they didn't get the horse up to full speed. Abigail's father didn't want to push it too hard until he was certain the repaired gear would hold up to the stress. It outperformed, and by the second day, they were moving along at a much better clip. The animals had been unsaddled and let go. All the supplies they could pack into the horse's undercarriage were secured for their trip. Atham spent his time relaxing and creating a new shirt from a couple of blankets and some loose wire he'd found in the horse's storage compartment. Even though he was quiet, he did appear to be in better spirits. At least he spent more time sitting up and enjoying the sun. Abigail even started to mimic his sitting and turning to the sun to feel the rays on her face. "There's a river just ahead. We should stop and refill everything." By that, her father meant that anything that would hold water, water skins, canteens, and the boiler. They still had a few of the coal bars left, but they would need to fell trees soon in order to keep a good supply of fuel going into the horse. It wouldn't make it the rest of the way to California on hopes and wishes. As her father looked over the horse, Abigail and Atham sat on the edge of the river and dipped their feet into the water. The water at this part of the river ran slowly and disappeared around a bend. Further up, the sound of rapids mixed with the sound of birds. "We'll have to know how deep the water is." Abigail motioned with her head for Atham to jump in. "You are most correct." Atham reached over and gave her a push into the water. Having her feet in the water had been one thing. It was chilly but refreshing. Being suddenly immersed in the water made her skin rebel, and she screamed as her head poked out of the water. She stood on the bottom and walked to the bank. "So it's not very deep. You should learn to try standing up when you fall into water so you don't get all wet." Atham smiled. "And you should learn to warn somebody before you shove them into a cold river." She splashed him. They refilled the skins quickly enough. The boiler, on the other hand, took quite a long time to fill. Her father ran a hand through scraggly hair. "I'm surprised you kept running. We're nearly out of water. Another few miles and we will have come to a stop. Pour the water in slowly. Give each batch time to warm up so we don't crack anything. There's still a good amount of country ahead of us." Atham cocked his head to the side and listened. His face wrinkled up. Before Abigail could say anything, he held out a hand to silence her. Then she heard it as well. She should have thought about it. With water close, there had to be a human settlement, and being that they hadn't seen anything else, it must be a fort. The sound they both heard was of soldiers running up on horseback. "Run!" Atham didn't need any prodding. Thankfully, he had had a few days to heal. His run was more of a struggled jog, but he made good distance quickly. Thankfully, he crested a small hill just before the riders appeared over the hill across the river. Abigail pulled at her clothes that stuck to her body and tried her best to look dignified. Two of the men were soldiers, with their blue uniform jackets, white pants, and black boots. They each wore a different cap and had beards. They were led by a man dressed in a shirt that might once have been white, black pants, and a broad-brimmed cap. Despite his disheveled clothing, he was clean-shaven. All three had pistols holstered and carried rifles of varying size and far different from any rifle she had seen. The cowboy that led the two soldiers rode on a white stallion, but something caught Abigail's attention as the horse stamped the ground, a clicking and whirring noise. The horse turned sideways to reveal that one rear leg had been completely replaced by gears and steel. She didn't know if she should be amazed or outraged. How could somebody do that to an animal? "So what brings you out this way with that monstrosity?" the cowboy asked. Abigail assumed he must be a cowboy. He certainly looked the part. Her father stood and started to say something, but she stopped him. Her father was likely to be far too honest and trusting. They had had enough trouble on this journey across the country. It was time they avoided people and just kept going where they needed to go without any further interruptions. She didn't like the look of these men and doubted their intentions. "My father built this. We're headed to the coast. We have buyers looking for such a contraption, as you call it. I doubt you'd understand how it works. We're just refilling the boiler, and we'll keep on our way to California." The cowboy laughed. "Did you hear that, boys? The little lady and her daddy are headed to California." The two soldiers laughed. She bit her lip and tried not to say anything that might provoke them. She had no idea just how many more of them there were just over the ridge. "Little girl, do you know how to get to California?" The cowboy leaned down and peered across the river at her. He had a glove on one hand that he used to hold the horse's reins. "Of course I do." Even though she had no clue as to where they currently were, she wasn't about to let on. She just wanted the men to go away so Atham could come back and they could be on their way. Atham would know where they were. She pulled at her wet clothes once more and shook off a chill. "Did you hear that, boys? She knows where California is. Perhaps she can show us how to get there, too." The three men burst into loud, obnoxious laughter. Abigail really wanted these men to go away. She didn't like the way they talked to her. She didn't like the way they looked. She most certainly didn't like what they must be thinking. Out here in the wilderness, they would have no one to turn to if they needed help. Her father leaned in to talk to her. "Honey, I should talk to him." "No, just wait until they go away. They're not just going to stand there forever watching us." "That's what I'm afraid of. Look at the two men in uniform. They have no insignia, no medals, just hats and coats. They must be deserters. The one talking must be an outlaw. Honey, I've read about people like this in my books. We're in trouble." She looked over his shoulder and could see the cowboy pointing upriver. They must know where there was a shallow crossing. Just as her father suspected, the men were on the move, and they most likely didn't have much time. Worse, they had no protection. If these men were outlaws, who knew what could happen? Except for a couple of stops along the way to restock supplies, lakes, rivers, and forts, the trip had been uneventful. There was some question over the cart they drove, but for the most part everyone ignored Reginald and the two boys. They'd made it all the way to California. The last part of their trip would take them all the way to Mr. Huntington's claim. If the Champseys had gone the southern route, they might be there already. He had no idea what means of transportation they took, or if they ran into any complications along the way. If luck held, he'd beat them there and be able to establish himself for a week before they arrived. This would give him ample time to get the lay of the land and plan out his revenge. He could even begin his discrediting of Cecil early. He could start a rumor of the man coming in to take over the gold mining operation, a man coming to put them all out of work. Perhaps just head into the local saloon and start talking with a few people. It would easily spread from there. Then he could hide out and see if the rumor took hold. There were so many ways to play this. He had to make sure that neither the Champskys nor Mr. Huntington got wind of him being in town, or things would go poorly. Even if Cecil and his brat made it into town before him, he could still do that. He would just need to be far more careful. Sure, Cecil wouldn't expect him to be there and wouldn't be looking for him, but a familiar face in a strange town would stand out too much. He needed to be careful, no matter what he planned to do. "I said I'm hungry. We've been going for 2 days. Can't we stop? You don't even talk. You just stare and hardly move. I think you could steer this thing straight off a cliff and you probably wouldn't even notice until we hit the ground. Oh, let's just ignore the screams of the dying children while this cart crashes to the ground below. They'll be dead soon anyways." Jax, shouting and waving his hands in the air, leaned into Reginald. "Please, mister, save us from a flaming death. I'm too young to die." The boy had a future in the theater with dramatics like this. "Don't worry. We'll stop soon. There must be a lake or something around here somewhere." "Really? You mean it this time? Last time you said that, I fell asleep and you was driving. Maybe I can drive for a bit. You know I'm getting real good at this driving business. Come on, you're just staring off into space. You're not even looking at where we're going." Jax bounced up and down on the seat. Reginald handed the boy the reins. "Fine, you drive. I'm going in the back to get a bite to eat. Let me know if you see any water." Jax took the reins and stood up. Even though the cart bumped and bucked, the boy liked to stand while he drove. So far nothing bad had happened, so he let Jax do as he would. Jess, who'd been leaning against the boiler, a blanket balled up behind him to protect him from the heat, had his feet up on the dwindling stack of wood, smiled at Reginald. "I hope we don't got much further to go. We need to resupply." The good thing about having so little weight on board the cart was that they were running faster now. The downside was that the missing weight was their fuel supply. If only they could have found some coal, this trip would have been accomplished with one load. They definitely needed to stop soon to resupply. Even the bag with their food was nearly empty. Reginald's stomach grumbled as he pulled out the last of the cheese and a small piece of bread. He held it up to Jess. The boy motioned that he didn't want any. Reginald made short work of the food. These two boys ate far more than he'd anticipated, but they also proved to be good at getting game along the way. They just needed to wait until the sounds of the cart died and the animals would return to the area. The cart took a rough bump and Jack shouted, "Hey, be careful up there! Hey, be careful up there! Hey!" Jess, the most excited Reginald had ever seen the boy, pointed at Jax. Reginald turned around and saw the boy wasn't standing and controlling the cart anymore. He threw the bread and cheese down and jumped up to grab the reins. As he did, the cart took another violent bounce, this time sending Reginald free of the cart. Jess stood up and dove for the cart, just as it went into a small ravine. The crack and clatter let Reginald know they'd be walking the rest of the way. What were they going to do? The cowboy and his two deserter soldiers were on their way across the river. Atham was hiding somewhere in the woods, and Abigail and her father were unarmed. At least if the horse was up and running, they might be able to make a run for it, as Mr. Lamone had done. They really had nowhere to go. Honey, please just let me do the talking. These men must be reasonable. Reasonable? They were in the middle of nowhere. No one was anywhere that might be able to help them. They would have been better off buying passage on a steamer and rounding Cape Horn. At least they could have relaxed the entire trip. They might have been able to stop at some ports along the way, and they'd truly arrive in California in style. Now they'd probably end up with bullets in their head. The three men rode up and stopped about 20 feet away. After holstering his rifle, the cowboy, with his ungloved hand, undid the leather strap around his gloved hand. He pulled a stump out of the glove, dismounted, and nodded to the two soldiers. He walked toward her and her father, alone. He tipped to his right as he walked, and his left leg shot forward as his spring activated. Each step was slow and deliberate as he watched the ground and watched Abigail and her father, and looked up at the horse behind them. Abigail did her best to stand tall and try not to look afraid. Inside, her stomach quivered and knotted. "So tell me, what is this thing? It looks... useful." Her father stepped forward, adjusted his glasses, and extended a hand. "I'm Cecil Chamsky. This is just a means of transportation taking us to California. That's all." The cowboy shook her father's hand. "Name's Ramsey. Guile Ramsey. These two boys are Benny Shanks and Arthur Skidder. Couple of deserters that came out of this way. Can't say as I blame them. The army ain't much of a life. Me? I got a ranch just over the hill." He pointed with his stump. "You're welcome to join me and the rest of my men for dinner." "I'm afraid we'll have to pass. We have a lot of territory to cover." "Right. You're headed to California." Again the cowboy smiled. "Why don't you tell me more about this thing, and I'll tell you how to get to California. Then perhaps you'll decide to join us for dinner." Her father lit up and started explaining nearly everything about the horse. He showed Guile the dials, levers, knobs, even the repair they had performed on the interior gear. He gave them everything they needed to know, and Abigail was sure at any time bullets would fly, and that would be that. He may as well be signing their death warrant. "You've got something quite special here. I appreciate you taking the time to show me. We don't get too many people out this way, on the banks of the Colorado River. I was surprised to hear you long before we saw you. Last time someone come this way, they were inside our camp, and it was all I could do to keep the man from being blown apart. Well, other than being loud, it's quite good transportation. I'll be sorry to have to tear it apart." "Apart? Whatever for?" Her father looked confused for a moment. He hadn't intended to say anything like that, and now was fumbling for words. Abigail stepped in to try and do something to put Guile on edge. "This is just one piece coming this way. There'll be a few more coming. Transporting parts is expensive unless those parts can transport themselves." Guile took off his hat, exposing graying hair. He wiped his brow with his stump. "That's ingenious. So you're just transporting raw material for something bigger?" "No, my father's the lead engineer, and we're expected soon." "So do you think..." Guile leaned in and spoke quietly. "We could use some help. Me and my men been stuck out here for a long time. We need to be moving on to something new. Please, why don't you join me for dinner? I'm sure we can come to some sort of agreement." Guile stood back and twisted his body. His left leg righted itself. Abigail couldn't help but stare. In response, Guile pulled up his pant leg to reveal a metal rod. "The war wasn't good to me. Your horse and I have more in common than you might imagine." He winked at her. "Father, I think we need to stop for dinner." She couldn't think of any other way to get them out of the situation gracefully. "I think that's a fine idea. Let's get this started up and we'll follow you, Mr. Ramsey." Guile started to walk away and turned back around. "Oh, just one thing before you come along. How do the two of you feel about giants?" Had they seen Atham? It wasn't possible. They'd been so careful, and Atham had gotten away quickly, long before Guile and the two soldiers came over the hill. They needed to be careful how they answered. Her father spoke first. "I think my opinion of them has changed on this trip we've taken. We've come from New York, and I think I had a lot of preconceptions." The words were out, and there was no taking them back. Hopefully they were obscure enough that Guile wouldn't take their meaning too literally. "Well, I'll have to warn you, we've got a couple of them in camp. If they make you anxious at all..." Abigail started to laugh. "I don't see what's so funny, miss." "I thought you said you had giants in your camp." Guile squinted at her. "They're hard workers and pull their weight. If you're going to be working with machines like this, you'd best get friendly with a few. They've gotten a bad shake, just like the rest of my men have. If you're setting up some kind of business out this way, you could do worse than some deserters, a few giants, and a one-handed cowpoke. Like I said, we'll have some dinner, and we'll talk. Mr. Ramsey, would you mind if we invited a friend along? Giles' eyes widened. He turned and looked at the two soldiers, then back at her father. I beg your pardon, but what do you mean by that? Honey, why don't you go see if you can find Atham? After a harrowing river crossing that almost saw the horse downed, Guile led them down to the camp. If he hadn't called it a camp, Abigail would have sworn it was a small town. There were 5 fully constructed buildings surrounded by tents of varying size, yet all appeared to be made of patchwork of different cloth. Everyone stopped what they were doing to watch them all approach. She wished Atham had rowed on the platform. There were at least 12 men in camp, 5 or 6 women and 3 giants. All of them looked to be healthy enough, but definitely not used to company or anything that resembled city life. 2 men stood by a pipe, probably 4 feet in diameter, with a turning wheel on its side. The wheel turned a series of gears, but Abigail couldn't make out just what they did. But several logs sat near the working end of the gears. Perhaps it was used to split wood or cut planks. The water had to come from the river to drive the wheel. This bunch appeared to be most inventive. While the 2 soldiers rode over to the men nearest the pipe, Guile rode up to a man standing with 2 women. One woman had her arm around the man, while the other took the reins of Guile's horse while he dismounted. He got off and gave her a kiss on the cheek and pointed to the horse. Abigail wished she could hear what they were saying. Atham stood near the horse while it powered down. Even though it had only been a short distance, her ears rang. "Cecil? Miss? I'd like the 2 of you to meet my wife, Lucinda Ramsey. You don't got to go being so formal. I'm Cindy. The 3 of you don't look like you've had a good meal in weeks. Don't let the riffraff frighten you, dear." Cindy took Abigail's hand. "You come with me. Your father and the giant can go wash up for supper. What's your name, dear?" "Abigail." She didn't get to say anything else. The other man's wife, Bella, took Abigail's other hand, and they both led her into the largest of the buildings. Before she knew it, and despite her protests, they were getting her out of her dress and putting her into a tub of warm water. Thankfully, the room had no windows. The 2 women talked about the camp, how they'd love to go to a city somewhere, but how everyone was either an outlaw or an outcast. They all understood their place and just wanted a fresh start. Abigail told them about New York and their trip through St. Louis and the trouble they had along the way. The 2 women just nodded as they washed her hair and helped her get clean. It was difficult to enjoy the much-needed bath with 2 women constantly talking and giving her instructions, and washing her with something that smelled like week-old milk but made her skin feel refreshed. By the time they were done with her, she just wanted back in her own clothes. Instead, they put her in a dress that was a couple sizes too big and an unnatural color of blue. She wanted to look at herself in the mirror. It had been weeks since she'd seen herself, and she wondered what they'd done with her hair. It was up, with a couple of strands hanging down. Cindy kept fidgeting with Abigail's hair. "There you go, dear. Judging by the amount of filth in the water, you really needed that bath. A girl shouldn't have to go so long between washings." "Well, we've been on the road a lot, and the horse kicks up a lot of ash. We haven't been around other people, so I guess I didn't see the need." "So you told us about how you got here. Where are you headed?" Bella asked. "My father works for Mr. Huntington." She didn't see the need for any more secrets. "We're on our way to California. My father is supposed to build some gold mining equipment." The 2 women laughed. Abigail didn't understand what they found so funny. "Isn't there gold in California? I thought..." "It's not that, dear. It's that you're already in California. As soon as you crossed over the Colorado River, you were where you wanted to go, though I'm sure you want to be further north. Guile should have told you that." Cindy ran the back of her fingers over Abigail's cheek. The 2 women, smiles on their faces, stood and looked at Abigail for a time. She felt awkward, as if there was something else they could be doing instead of just standing around. She hadn't spent much time on herself during the trip, and now it felt uncomfortable while they all stood around. Is there anything I can do to help around here?" Cindy barked a laugh. "Look at us, just standing around like we've never seen a young girl before. We were preparing dinner before you and your father made such a racket that Guile and his men had to go see what it was all about. Should have known you'd stop by the river. It's not like you knew we were down here. Don't you worry about a thing. You've had a long trip. Let's just go outside and find you a place to kick up your feet. I'm sure your father's doing the same thing already. What was his name again?" As they made their way outside, Abigail told them about her father and how he was an engineer back in New York. She also told them about Atham and how he'd been injured and they brought him along so that he could help each other out. Giants are mighty powerful friends to have. Not too many folk understand that. It's a good thing you and your father figured that out. That's why some of the men deserted from the army. They couldn't stand hunting down giants like some kind of pest. This was their land first, along with the Native Americans. People need to learn to share. There's more than enough land for everyone. Oh, but listen to me, I'm carrying on. Let's get you and your father and Atham a good meal. The meal set out for them was more than she could imagine. Her father had taken her to some fancy restaurants in New York, and they had some big meals, but the amount of food spread out on the table dwarfed anything she had seen. Sure, there were giants to be fed, but the food looked to be far too much for them. 7 birds, probably turkeys or geese, a whole hog, large bowls filled with vegetables she didn't even know existed, breads. Oh, how she'd forgotten how much she missed breads, and even pies. How do you make so much food? She asked. Oh, dear. We don't have much else to do out here but make food and build our little buildings. Sometimes we tinker, when we find things to tinker with. We've got nothing but time out here. She'd been wrong about how much food there was. Atham sat and smoked a pipe with the 3 other giants, and laughed, and they even sang together. She had a feeling this was where he would part ways with them. He belonged with his own people, and for the first time since she'd met him, he looked honestly happy and at peace. Guile and her father sat talking. Their voices would go up, and everyone would quiet down, and they'd start up again. She knew if he had a piece of paper and a pencil, he'd be doing drawings and explaining something to Guile. She couldn't make out what they were saying, as she strained to hear. A plate with a slice of pumpkin pie appeared in front of her. "You seem to be the only one not happy. Is everything all right, dear?" "Oh, yes, thank you, miss." "Cindy, please." "Thank you, Cindy. I'm just curious what my father and your husband are talking about." "I think we're about to find out." Cindy pointed to Guile, who had stood up and waved his arms in the air. "Everyone, everyone, your attention. I have some wonderful news. Our new friend, Cecil Chamsky, and his lovely daughter Abigail, and their giant friend Atham, have made us an offer I don't think we can refuse. For too long, we have sat and just waited for people to wander by us. We've made a good life for ourselves here, but it's time we moved on. Time for a change. Time to reclaim the lives that were once ours. Do you agree with me?" A cheer went up, and mugs of beer were raised by several of the men. "How do the lot of you feel about gold mining?"